Blog Talk Radio.
Like every other kid in the hood. But last time this boy cried when he woke up one morning, realized he was a fatherless child. Daddy never there, showed him no love, learned to emulate thugs, bust slugs with the intent to kill. Ran these streets, hide in a cable bill. Paranoid cause these streets are stressing him. His motto, ain't nobody getting the best of him. Round these parts, drug wars make the gun spark. Triggers ain't got no heart. Women are hoes, kids in the way. God, that's just the word in the Bible. They pray for death on their rivals. Out here, nobody cares. You can smell genocide in the air. From the corners, the kids gave birth to crackheads and chicken heads. They were misled by their father's old heads. They learned to cop reek, work off the reekers. They went to war with the dreads. Better off dead is what this old lady said. She spoke truth to power. In his darkest hour, they closed his casket at 19. Rest in peace, t-shirts, laced his whole team. His mother crying, dressed in black. Searched the church, front to back. Even on this day, a daddy he lacked. You're a self-exiled monarch from your castle and home. Making you a king without a throne. Making your son a prince without a crown. Look at him now. He lived and died a fatherless child. And this must be supported karma. Like Sonia Sanchez being my father's baby mama. So you see my dad, thank you for me, but give me this gift indirectly. Top 5 dead alive wordsmith in hip-hop, R&B, or poetry. So if you think you won't outright me, forget it. And you can take that to heart like God said. Maybe when I'm going to give me credit, but right now, I'm that boy you want that boy. I'm like Langston Hughes on steroids. Eliza Rashad, my little girl, little boy. Better father than my daddy ever was. And if poetry was a drug every day, I'd be taking it in the head and blowing the bag. And seeping out my soul to you. Sit next to me, might catch a contact. But I wish boys was a female. So I could dive in face first. Put my mouth where she gives birth. Grab her by hair, slap her on the backside and ask her, whose poetry is this? She say it's yours, daddy. And 9 months later, she'll make me happy. Give me 2 miracles. I name one wordplay to other lyrical. Just so I can walk up to people and say, did you see my lyrical wordplay? Never had a daddy, but I always had poetry. So I gotta thank God for giving me this literary style. And maybe this makes us even. For me growing up, a fatherless child.
Greetings, people. This is Cody Chestnut, 2 capital T's, and you're listening to Brother Hezekiah, here for the common soul. I ain't never lied to my people. Because I love my people. Cody, let's talk to the people. Cody Chestnut. And we can shut down the economy if we stop shopping. And make a list of demands, hold this country for hostage. Can I be honest? Obama wants change, but we need dollars. So pessimistic, we don't believe in anything, we're so religious. Plus the car's running, got an iPhone, but got prepaid minutes. We looking for closure, cause inside we all self-loathing. Your daughter need clothing, pampers. Why you in the club playing that dance? What's the king of the parking lot? Now you sweeping up here in a barbershop.
Who you think of next? What's kind of? Who will we think of next? What's kind of? Who will we think of next? What's kind of? To hide behind. Know how to cut, know how to rap and bang, and how to get paid with a bonus pick again.
Hello. Welcome to The Flip Side. This is Master Griot Radio, and we'll be bringing you Mrs. Rashida Jabbar.
And Welcome to The Flip Side. I'm your moderator, Mrs. Rashida Jabbar, and I am also the one of the co-founders of J&R Grassroots Artist Development. And I tell you, we have a wonderful, 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 exciting show today. This evening we have our guest today will be Brother Umar R. Abdullah Johnson, and our topic today of discussion would be the psycho-academic war against black boys. But what I'm going to do, we're going to turn this over to our co-host, and we're going to get this started because he's going to get our guests on the line, introduce and bring our guests on board, and then we're going to take it from there. Co-host?
Our guest this evening is Brother Umar R. Abdullah Johnson. He is the president of National Movement to Save Black Boys, a National Certified School Psychologist, Pennsylvania Certified School Principal, and kinsman Frederick Douglass. He practices privately throughout Pennsylvania and lectures throughout the country. As a school psychologist, he evaluates children ages 3 to 21 in an effort to determine if they have educational disabilities and a need for special education services. Robert Umar is considered a national expert on learning disabilities and their effects on black children, as well on an expert on helping schools and parents modify challenging behaviors that can ultimately lead to disruptive behavior disorders diagnosis in black boys. As a child therapist, Umar specializes in working with at-risk, violent, suicidal, and depressed African-American boys and girls. For 5 years, he has served as the youngest of 5 African-American male school psychologists in the 5th largest public school district in America, the School District of Philadelphia.
As an educator, psychologist, therapist, and his
Historian
Umar is considered an
authority
on the education of African American children and the mental health in the black community.
Our discussion this evening is concerning the psycho-academic war against black boys. This topic was selected by Brother Umar. Do we have Brother Umar on the line?
Yes, we do.
Thank you. Brother Umar, welcome to The Flip Side.
Thank you.
Brother
it's an
Umar,
honor to be with you tonight.
Brother Umar, my question is, why did you choose this topic concerning the psycho-academic war against black boys? And please explain to me, what does this topic mean as a black boy? Why should it concern me?
The psycho-academic war against black boys is probably the greatest human rights issue in the world right now. It is the most neglected civil rights issue in the United States and one of the greatest weapons that's being used to marginalize and oppress the black community. The psychoacademic war against black boys basically encompasses 5 stages that takes the black boy from birth until premature extermination. The first stage is miseducation, where the black boy is taught to hate himself, to love European culture, and if possible, to effeminize the black male. Stage two is to psychotropically medicate the black boy. This is when the black male is referred for a clinical, psychological, or psychiatric evaluation and is unnecessarily classified as a student with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or conduct disorder or oppositional defiant disorder or disruptive behavior disorder, which becomes the gateway to prescribing the black boy unnecessary and very toxically dangerous psychotropic medicines in the form of the most popular drugs, including Ritalin, Adderall, Concerta, Strattera, Depakote, Cyclerp, and the list goes on. Stage three is the incarceration of the black male. This begins with juvenile hall, and it ends up in adult prison, marginalizing the black boy from society. When he gets out of jail, he enters stage four, a stage of psychological peril, where he feels emotionally isolated. He feels psychologically that he has become a failure, and this leads to anger. This leads to pain, and this leads to violence. And then it brings us to stage five, which is extermination of the black male. As a result of the miseducation, the psychotropic medication, the incarceration, which led to the psychological frustration and isolation, that brings us to stage five, which is the extermination of the black boy. One out of every four black boys will be murdered, most likely at the hands of another black male by the age of 25. And those five stages encompass the psychoacademic war against black boys, the greatest civil rights issue on the face of the earth, the greatest civil rights issue in the United States, and the number one weapon being used to destabilize the black community.
Brother Umar, Sister Rashida, they are here like, wow. So we're going to move this along, and what we're going to do is that we're going to talk in reference to, because you hit one of the points on medication. So one of our young men here has a question about the medication that is being administered to our young boys in reference to the Ritalin and concerning the ADHD. So he's going to ask you a question about that. Go ahead.
Sure.
What is the side effect of medication?
Of these medications.
Of these medications.
That's an excellent question, young man. The side effects of these drugs are very, very toxic. If I were to read one of them right now, let's see here. I'm looking at the physician's desk reference for all medications, and I'm simply trying to go to one of the more popular ones. Let's see here. LM, I believe I can find Concerta. Let me see here. Okay, here's one, Adderall. Adderall is the second most popular anti-stimulant that's given to black boys. Anti-stimulant means it seeks to calm down the nervous system or the brain. Side effects for Adderall include depression, dry mouth, heart attack, high blood pressure, hives, sexual impotence, overstimulation, rapid or pounding heartbeat, seizures, stomach and intestinal disturbances, stroke, sudden death, weight loss, abdominal pain, diarrhea, dizziness, fever, infection, including viral infection, insomnia, loss of appetite, mood swings, nausea, nervousness, vomiting, and weakness. This is coming directly from the physician's desk reference pocket guide to prescription drugs. Any parent who hears those side effects would probably be shocked to know that they're giving their child a drug that can cause such widespread side effects. That's because when the psychiatrist and the pediatrician write these prescriptions, parents are not being given informed consent. Informed consent is a big issue when it relates to mental health care in the black community. Informed consent means that you are informed and are making a wise decision to put your child on psychotropic meds. In order to be informed, you have to know about the side effects. But rarely are parents taught the side effects about these psychiatric meds that are given to our boys. And that is being done deliberately because the psychotropic drug companies, all of which publicly trade stock on Wall Street in New York City, make more than $50 billion a year. I said $50 billion a year off of selling these drugs to the parents of black boys.
That just answered my question.
He was going to ask you about why, the next young man was going to ask you of why, if the side effects are so drastic. I'm reading his notes as you're talking, and he wanted to know, then why do we administer to our young people? So you can still read the question, and go ahead, because you had it there.
So why do we give these drugs if their side effects are so negative?
And he just
right.
Go ahead, Brother Umar.
The disruptive behavior phenomenon or movement against black boys, this psychoacademic war could not exist without the war on black men. I want to make that clear. There could be no psychoacademic war against black boys, okay, if there wasn't a psychopolitical war against black men. The reason why so many black boys are diagnosed with ADHD, conduct disorder, and oppositional defiant disorder is because they don't have their fathers at home or they don't have their fathers in their lives, one or the other or both. This psychoacademic war against black boys, okay, is an after effect. It's an aftershock of the war on black men. You take the man out of the house, and as a result of doing that, you have a woman, most likely, who's trying to raise the son on her own. Some women do an excellent job of doing this. Miss Rashida, as a grandma, you do an excellent job of doing this, okay? But by and large, most mothers, particularly young mothers, who are raising these boys by themselves, are running into problems because, number one, there's nothing healthy about a mother trying to make a man out of a boy. There's nothing normal about that. She needs a man's help. But on top of that, many of our mothers are learning to be parents for the first time. They're going to make mistakes. And instead of supporting our mothers and trying to help them raise our boys, we find that the prison industry, the public school industry, the school-to-prison pipeline, the psychologists and the psychiatrists are simply trying to get rich. They're simply trying to exploit the problems that single black mothers are having raising their boys. They're exploiting those problems for personal financial profit. If there was no war on the man, if there wasn't 2 million men in jail, mostly black, there would be no need for ADHD. If there wasn't 2 million black men in jail, there would be no need for conduct disorder. Boys who have their fathers in their house or in their life don't catch ADHD. They don't catch conduct disorder. These are simply the outgrowths of a destabilized black family as a result of the war on black men.
Hello, Brother Omar.
How you doing, good brother? Sure.
So how do we get men to raise their boys in out of jails?
Well, that's a very good problem. I'm sorry, that's a very good question. Here's the problem. The black community is probably one of the most selfish communities in America. We know that American culture in and of itself is narcissistic, is very individualistic, and it is very ego-based, which means it's all about everybody trying to get theirs, not worrying about nobody else. Because of the selfishness in the black community, most successful black men, most educated black men, do almost nothing to give back to other black boys and to the community as a whole. The average black man, once he gets his education and he's able to make enough money to move out of the inner city or out of the black neighborhood and move into a white one, that's exactly what he'll do, and he'll never look back. He'll probably even marry a white woman, and he'll never look back. So unfortunately, we don't have enough black men who are willing to give back. So what we have to do is educate the next generation of black boys to understand that they have an obligation to give back to their community. The black men today, they were not raised with that kind of a mindset. They were not. They were raised to be selfish. They were raised to pursue the American dream, and once they got it, turn their backs on their people.
Most of the educated black men I know, be they school psychologists, psychiatrists, educators, businessmen, politicians, they do nothing for their community. There's a few men who do, but most of them do not. And even some of the ones who give back in the form of community organizations, many of them are hypocrites who only give off the appearance that they're giving back because they're getting some kind of money or political kickback for acting like they care. But the problem with us is that black men are not reaching back. And until we change that, we're going to continue to see black boys be victimized and blamed for the problems in our society.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Mm.
That was so true, Brother Lamar.
I have seen...
Say that again, my brother.
I have seen violent shootings, and how can I feel safe in schools, not blamed?
Well, the problem with violence, and we have to understand, the mother of all violence is miseducation. The father of all violence is economic castration. Every criminal was miseducated. Every criminal was prevented from getting a wage-earning job. The average reading level of black men in prison is third grade. So that tells you right there that miseducation is the mother of crime. And, of course, if you've been miseducated, you're not employable. So then you are kept from getting employment. So your miseducation is used against you even further to keep you from finding a livable wage job. So again, if we want to stop crime, we have to address its causes, which means we have to fix miseducation, and then we have to destroy economic marginalization. For example, in Philadelphia, the white racist labor unions pretty much dictate who gets the contracts and who works on what new construction sites that are going to be built in Philadelphia. Now, this is taxpayers' money that's being used to build all of these buildings around our city. But it is the white racist labor unions who decide who gets to work on those contracts. So when you go through Philadelphia, a city that is half black, in fact, Philadelphia is the only top 10 American city, top 10 in terms of size and top 10 in terms of importance, okay, that has a black population that equals or exceeds the white population. Philadelphia is the only top 10 city that has a black population that equals or exceeds the white population. However, in Philadelphia, when you drive through the city, you will find new projects, new construction, new buildings being erected every day, and 99%, if not 100%, of the men working on these new publicly funded projects are all white. There's almost no skilled black labor out there working, and nobody's doing nothing about it. Not black city council people, not black religious leaders, not black community leaders, not black business leaders. Black leadership, nationally, statewide, locally, internationally, has been very, very quiet on issues that matter most to the black community. But to answer your question, if we want to stomp out violence, we got to stomp out miseducation and economic castration. Criminals are not born. Criminals are made. The media is trying to convince the American citizen that black people are born to commit crime. They're trying to convince white folk to believe that black boys come out of their mothers genetically predisposed to kill one another. That is not true. Study any population on earth where they were kept from getting a decent education and being able to provide a livelihood for their family. Study any population on earth, and you will see wherever education is poor and wherever unemployment is high, you will have crime. The problem is no one's raising that issue in the black community, and we're allowing the white racist media to influence American people that black folk are genetically disposed to commit crime, as opposed to looking at the variables that lead to crime in our community.
We have one more question, Brother Omar, and
sure,
we're going to take a brief break, because what you just said to them, they are pondering and their eyes are getting watery. The information that they are receiving right now has really, I can see it, has really done something to them as well as me. So we're going to let the young brother do another question, and then we're going to close out with that. We're going to take a break, and then our one of our hosts, our moderator, Jacqueline Taylor Adams, we ask that you play Thank You, Jacqueline, if you can. And then we're going to give the number where we're going to start accepting call-ins after the young brothers, we take this break. So you can go ahead and do your next question, please.
So how do a black boy stay focused and become successful with so much against us? My dad is in jail.
Well, here's the thing. It's difficult being a black boy in America, just like it's difficult being a black man in America, just like it's difficult being a black girl or a black woman in America. Black people do not have it easy in this country. It's going to be difficult. However, our inspiration comes from our ancestral lineage. When you study the history of black people in this country during slavery, prior to slavery, during Reconstruction, the Garvey movement, the Civil Rights movement, the Black Power movement, you will see that we have always been able to succeed against the odds. One of the things that we have in our favor is black people are God's first people. When God created man and woman, he made them African. And because of that, we are the closest to the bosom of God. And because of that, I think that we as African people have been given a certain degree of spiritual strength that if we tap into it correctly, we can use it to carry us through any sort of a traumatizing experience. So what we have to do is take our experience and take the struggles that we had yesterday and today and use them as motivational energy. Use it as fuel for motivation. Don't use it as fuel for excuses. Don't use it as fuel for depression. Don't use it as fuel for a mindset that allows you to stop trying to fight because you know you're going to have to face more obstacles than a white person would. Don't use it for that. Use it for the motivation. Frederick Douglass, Marcus Garvey, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Fannie Lou Hamer, Malcolm X, Dr. King, you name it. We come from people who simply looked at odds and had the conviction and firm belief that they were going to be able to overcome anyway. Frederick Douglass had no idea that he would help end slavery. Harriet Tubman had no idea that she would be able to free over 300 enslaved Africans. King had no idea that he would be able to bring an end to segregation. Marcus Garvey had no idea that he would be able to found the largest black organization in modern history and not use a single white penny to do it. They didn't know. And if you look rationally at the odds, they were against them. But it was their firm belief in God, regardless of religion. It was their fame, their firm belief in God that carried them through. And I think that same spiritual energy, that same ashe, that ancestors through the tough times, that same ashe can get us through our tough times also.
Thank you.
Wow. What we're going to do now, we want to give the callers, any listeners, if you're out there, we invite you to come in and dialogue with questions for our young men on the flip side, as well as Brother Umar. So we're going to give you the number now. That's 1-646-716-7994. Once again, 1-646-716-7994. You're listening to The Flip Side, and we invite you to stay with us so we have more with Brother Umar and our LOL boys. Jacqueline Taylor Adams.
I'm
welcome back to the Flip Side. We have today with us Brother Umar Abdullah Johnson. He is the president of the National Movement to Save Black Men, Black Boys. He's a nationally certified school psychologist and a certified, I would say, renowned speaker and a kinsman to Frederick Douglass. We were just so engaged in a conversation in reference to the psycho-academic war against black boys. Now, what we're going to do, because this is the flip side, Brother Umar, we're going to flip this a little bit, because what I want to do is to engage you in more dialogue, and the young men, they feel as though they want to continue to listen right now. They're shaking their head, yeah. So we're going to let them ask the last questions that they have, and I ask you to keep it brief, because a lot of things that you're going to give back to me is something that me and you need to dialogue about, so the young men can sit back and just engage and absorb the information that we're about to put out there. So we want the first young man to ask the question, please.
My question
Excuse me.
Yes?
I'm sorry, but we have five callers on the line that's been on about 30 minutes.
Okay, Jacqueline, what we want to do, okay, if you callers can please be patient with me, because we want to get the young men out the way. There's only three questions, and they're very brief, and we want to get them out the way because we want these young men to sit back and absorb whatever the callers have to say to us along with Brother Umar, because this is getting deep. So we want to help and get them, because they want to sit down and enjoy this. So call us, please. Don't hang up. Bear with us just a few seconds. Go ahead.
My question is, can you tell me what is the National Movement to Save Black Boys, and what inspired you to become the president of the of this movement?
The National Movement to Save Black Boys is a movement that I started a year ago. And the reason I started the movement is because I didn't see any organization out there that was honestly addressing the issue that's facing black boys. I saw no organization that was out there helping parents keep their sons out of special ed, help their parents prevent their sons from being suspended or expelled, help parents keep their sons from being diagnosed with ADHD and put on drugs. And because I saw that no organization was out there taking a strong stand, because there are some organizations out there who profess to be helping, but they're not making many inroads because they're not serious. So we needed something serious, and that's why the National Movement to Save Black Boys was started.
Brother Umar, what would you do to assist a young boy in school who is acting out in anger or full of rage?
Well, number one, children by nature are happy. So when a young man is angry, that automatically tells me that there's something going wrong in his personal life or in his school life, one or the other or both. Whenever a child is angry, whenever a child is sad, that's not normal. So what I have to do is try to find what is the variable in that young man's life that's leading to the sadness, that is leading to the anger, and then I seek to correct that variable. They could be sad because their father's not there. They could be sad that they correctly or incorrectly perceive that they're not being treated fairly by their classroom teacher. They might be sad that because their parents don't allow them time to go outside and interact with other children their age. Some children are kept in the house all day, and they suffer from the absence of social stimulation. So there's all types of reasons. Some children are abused by their parents. Unfortunately, some children have been sexually assaulted. There's a million and one reasons why a child could be sad or angry, but the job of the psychologist is to investigate and find out what exactly is making this young man sad, because, again, a child by nature is happy.
My question to you is, why did you decide to become a school psychologist, and what impact do you feel you have had on the young men that you work with?
Well, originally, I wanted to be a clinical psychologist. And I do have my master's degree in clinical psychology. I'm finishing up my doctorate degree in clinical psychology. And the reason I wanted to be a psychologist, period, was because I didn't have an older brother when I was growing up. And I always wanted someone older who I could speak with. I have two older sisters, but I was the oldest boy.
I didn't have an older brother or a big cousin who I could look up to. So because I didn't have that person who I could talk to when I was young, I said when I get older, I was going to be that person for other younger boys and girls who they could come and talk to if they had problems. I came to school psychology by accident, just by investigating it and being told by other individuals, including some white folk, who told me that I should look into school psychology with my background and desire to help young black boys. And I got into it, and I have never left since. In fact, if I could do it all over again, I probably would have never gotten my doctorate in clinical. I would have just gotten my doctorate in school psychology, and I would have been done 4 years ago. But hindsight is 20/20. But I do love what I do.
Thank you. And I want everyone to know, callers, we're going to get you in now, but I want everyone to know that these young boys that are here, it's two of them that are 11 years old that are asking the questions, and one is at the age of 10. So I think these young men are phenomenal. And the one of the young men, he's a honor roll student, and he has a compelling question to Brother Umar. But we want to say this question here, he's a little upset, but he's going to ask you. So go ahead. And this is not scripted. This is something he wants to know about himself.
Brother Umar, I have one more question. Since my dad isn't around, how come I don't have ADHD or isn't acting out or raising anything?
Because your grandmom did an excellent job raising you. See, it's not that parents or grandparents can't compensate for the absence of the father. It's that it's difficult to compensate. And because of your grandmom's wisdom, she's been able to compensate for that loss. Now, it's still not the same as having your father there, you know, but the replacement and the compensation has been done so well that you will be buffered against some of the effects of not having your father there and present in your life, whereas a lot of other black boys who don't have their father, okay, they don't have anyone in their life who cares enough or is wise enough to buffer them against the effects of that absentee dad. So, you know, you've been blessed with the grandmother that you have because she's been able to do a marvelous job of being able to compensate for the absence of your father. It's not that we can't compensate. It's that it's so difficult for grandparents and parents to do that, especially the young moms who we have now. They are struggling more than anybody else to try to raise these boys by themselves.
Okay. Well, we're going to open the call. We want to thank the young men. We want to thank Brother Umar because you are going to say good night to him a little later, but we're going to let you all engage so you can thank him.
Thank you, Brother Umar.
Thank you, Brother Umar.
Thank you.
Okay, call us, Jacqueline Taylor Adams, because me and Brother Umar, in the last 15 minutes of the show, that means a quarter after, we're going to dialogue, just the two of us, and we want everyone to hold on. So, first caller, please, Jacqueline Taylor Adams.
Okay, we have the caller from the 843.
Caller
from the 843.
Am I on?
Yes, you're in. You're on.
Peace. This is Bretta. How is everyone this evening?
Hi. Everyone's great.
Very good. I just wanted to let you know that I am almost teary-eyed listening to the young men ask the questions and pretty much conduct the interview. I think that's very positive vibes, and, you know, I'm really looking forward to the men that these young men, they actually mature into. So I think this is a great, great format. My question for Umar is, and I couldn't wait till you and I spoke later on this week, but my question for you is that when I look at the leadership, you know, I agree with you that they, you know, perhaps have a lot of ulterior motives in terms of their so-called leadership patterns. But how do we get to the grassroots efforts, you know, the individuals who are actually having an impact with these young men? Because I find that sometimes leaderships are so disengaged from actually what's happening on the ground floor. How do we actually start to do something massive from the ground roots on up to actually bring about change?
Well, number one, what you have in the black community right now, which I think is working against our collective best interest, is that you have several nonprofit organizations that claim to work for the betterment of young men who are actually fighting
against one another for the limited grant money that's out there, as opposed to pooling their resources and seeing how this can become a collective undertaking. They are busy sabotaging each other's efforts, fighting for the same grant money. And so you have all these different groups of black men who, if they put their heads together, could probably raise the money that they need in order to function. But as you know, in the black community, we have a big ego problem, which is really just a big security problem. And until we address that, things are going to be difficult. We also have to get back to doing things and putting our money where our mobs are. We have lost our sacrificial spirit. 75 years ago, black people had a sacrificial spirit, where we know that we were not going to get anything back for what we were doing, and we knew that we had to contribute to the effort financially over a sustained amount of time, and we did that. But today, very few black people are willing to do things just for the sake of doing them if they're not going to get any kickback. Again, our greed and our ego, even when it comes to grassroots issues, is standing in the way. You know, which is why when I do a lot of things, I let it be made known up front. I'm not in this for any money. I'm not looking for no grants. I'm not looking for no payment. I do this because it has to be done. Payment is just seeing the improvement in the lives of our young folks. But, again, we got too many folks who are in this for the money. They're not in it for the boys.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Greta, for calling in. We're going to move it along because me and Brother Umar, we're going to cover that a little deeper because the two of us have been involved in a collective. I got them to come on board. And we have there are some serious issues that concerns our young black men and boys, and we're going to cover that as we move forward. But we want to get all the callers on because we want to appreciate them calling. Ms. Greta, we thank you so much. And we
peace. Thank you.
You passed the word about the flip side for our young people. Thank you.
Peace. Thank you.
Next caller, please.
Okay, we have the caller from the 404. Would you like to ask a question or say anything? Calling from the 404.
Okay, moving on. Next caller.
All righty. We ask everyone, if you want to speak with the host, press 1, and that way we'll know, but I'm going to come and make sure everyone, whether or not you want to speak. We got the caller from the 202.
Caller, 202 area code. Welcome to the flip side.
Okay, caller from the 843.
Welcome to the flip side, 843.
And we had caller from the 562.
Welcome to the flip side, caller 562.
Okay, then that means everybody else just wants to listen in. So, you
That's
know,
great.
Go ahead on with the conversation.
Okay, Brother Umar, now it's me and you, Sister Rashida. And we're going to take this and we're going to flip it a little bit because we're going to get into conversations that you and I have had in reference to we're going to take it to back to the psychological epidemic war against black boys. And from where I see it, it all goes together. The lack of, I'm going to say it, and if no one else say it, community concern. Concern of our black men and boys. If we have organizations out here that are just doing the work because of funding, that means none of the work is getting done. I just went to a conference and spoke on behalf, did a presentation up at the Department of Labor, and it was really beautiful, and it was surrounding youth offenders. And we're finding that we have a lot of, they're building, tearing down schools and building more prisons to house our young men. And there are a lot of people out here that's receiving funding for these type of activities. But for me, being on the grassroots level, I don't see any change. I see millions of dollars being invested in these organizations. But to be honest with you, I see no outcomes. And how do people like myself, grassroots, that are sincere, that give their last to help these young men, how do someone like me combat those, especially in Philadelphia, I never seen anything like this before in my life, and I'm going to keep it real, that they fight against trying to save our young people. They fight on grants. They backbite each other. They slime each other. We are in a horrible political arena, vicious arena, and how do someone like me, who is sincere about helping these young men, go around and underside or around these entities to really make an impact? Because there are grassroots organizations and people that are really out here doing the work. I've seen it. I've spoken to them. I have collaborated with them. And we are so frustrated because of the ones that are getting the accolades are not doing the work. And those same young people that are going to them, they're still coming in the streets in the neighborhood to people like myself. How do we combat that? Because I'm frustrated, I'm tired, I'm disgusted with things that are going on in our country concerning young black boys and men.
Well,
that
here's
was a lot
the thing. Before the United States government started giving out grants, and before the Rockefeller dynasty created the nonprofit corporation, black people relied on their own pennies to get things done. You look at the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you look at the Black Panther Party, you look at the Morris Science Temples, and then you look at the most successful of them all, the Marcus Garvey movement. 15 million people, steamships, corporations, schools, without a single white penny, simply done by the goodwill offerings of black people. That's the only way to do this. We got to go back to the grassroots movement. The problem is we've gotten so comfortable with all of this so-called free money that's floating around that many of us have forsaken the true grassroots funding for governmental funding. But the problem is when you get governmental funding, it comes with strings attached. And as a result of that, you're really not as free as you want to be in the first place. And unfortunately, the nonprofit grant situation, you know, is really politically motivated because the politicians don't give the grants to the people who deserve them, like you. They give them to people who are in certain strategic places who can help return votes for them on election day. So the money that's being given ain't being given to the best initiatives. It's being given to people who have the type of influence that the politicians feel can help bring them a return on election day. So no one cares about the child. It ain't about the kids at all. It's simply about those who have the influence that can return the politician something for what they gave them on election day. But, again, it's no need to worry about that because, again, the community is there. Is it tougher to get black people to put their money with them where their mouth is and donate to the different causes? Certainly. It's very difficult. But it's possible, and it's the only thing that really has ever worked. See, once you get dependent on grants from Europeans to run your organization, they begin to take over the organization. Because what happens is you get to a point where you're totally dependent on the money, and so now they're dictating to you how you're going to run your organization. I'm sure you know of examples of this. I know of examples of this, of real strong, you know, African-based community organizations who now in 2011 have come full circle to be sellout organizations, you know, that are of almost no effectiveness. Why? Because they increased their reliance on white money in order to operate. The black community cannot afford to have its organizations being funded by white folks. We have to fund our own organizations. In Philadelphia,
and you know,
which I
Brother
call,
Kumar,
yes,
and you know that's exactly where I'm at. I can honestly 100% say that I have never been funded by anyone, okay? And I have assisted thousands of young people. You have been to the event where we had thousands of young people. We fed them, educated them, and just brought the whole community involved. So I'm where you're at right now, and I'm just a little perturbed because I was speaking to an individual here in Philadelphia, and they were doing a press conference, and the brother called the brother, and he said, "Brother, why you had a press conference on black male achievement and didn't inform me?" The brother says, "Oh, brother, it was a political move." Those are the things that I'm outraged about because if we have brothers and men that are saying they're in the forefront and they're our leaders and they're doing this groundwork and community work, there's no way in the world that a man, another brother, who's saying he's doing the exact work that you're doing and he tells you that it's a political move and you accept that and it's okay. See, I have a problem not only with the ones that are receiving the money, but I have a problem with the men that are running behind and jumping on bandwagons for whoever and whatever, because right now, you know, like I know, there's a big price tag from the government, private foundations, and other entities that are saying, if you go out there and do this Black Male Achievement Initiative, I'll give you a couple of dollars. So now everybody and their mother is running around here trying to do a Black Male Initiative. But I tell you this, while they're running around trying to figure it out, we're out here still trying to do the work, and our young men are suffering mentally, physically, spiritually. It's just a mess. And it affects me.
The Black Male issue today is popular. See, remember, nonprofit pimps and religious pimps and political pimps, you know, they always look for the next hot issue. And right now, you know, keeping Black boys out of jail, Black Male Achievement, you know, fatherless boys, you know, that's the new hot thing, which means whenever there's a hot idea, they know that there's grant money behind it. For example, I saw a couple weeks ago that some of the nonprofit community organizations came together at Martin Luther King Rec Center, some politicians, some people worked for the mayor, you know, some people got their own little nonprofit. They were there, and they launched this new task force to deal with the issue that's facing Black males. You know, and I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at the individuals involved, and half of them ain't never been serious about nothing except finding some money. You know,
exactly.
But, you know, it ain't nothing serious going on. Like, people ask me all the time, why are you not a part of this? Why are you not a part of that? Because I know the people involved are not sincere. It's nothing but a hustle, you know. And I'm going to make the argument, you know, and I believe that I can, and I don't make it arrogantly, but if you're dealing with Black males in Philadelphia or in the United States, because I'm a national figure, in the United States, if you're talking about achievement, incarceration, special education, violence, if you're dealing with Black males and Umar Johnson ain't at the table, it's not serious. Because there's no one out there more serious than me. You're just not serious. I don't care who they are, whether it's Minister Farrakhan, Reverend Sharpton. If you're talking about Black boys and I ain't at the table, you are not serious. And, of course, in Philadelphia, which is my own hometown, if you're talking about Black boys, you're not serious. Because there's no one more serious or knowledgeable or involved than I am. You see? So, again, when you see things like that, you know it's nothing but a hustle. It's to get some publicity. They're not serious.
No, they're not. No, they're not. They're not
but
serious.
We can't worry about them. We got to do the work because we can criticize them all day. We have to do the work. The people are going to follow those who they see with their own two eyes are doing the work, point blank, period. We have to lead by example, and whoever leads by example will get the people. History has shown that.
Exactly. Now, what is your opinion about the organizations or individuals that have realized that the collective trying to do this on as a community instead of a separate entity, because that's where I'm at. I'm basically not just trying to, because so many people try to partner, and I can't stand that, trying to partner with me. Partner with me to do what? To get a name in the music industry, to get a name on the street. So I have a problem with that partnering. But I did find certain grassroots organizations, brothers like yourself, I've been knowing you for years, that will come on board and assist and be a part of something that's positive. So how do we get these entities together and where we would feel safe enough? Because, you know, I don't trust nobody when it comes to my young boys. I have done that already, and as an end result, I have a young man, two young men that lost their life to violence, and I have two young men that are currently incarcerated. And I have my son who is currently incarcerated. And that's a hard piece for me, trying to maintain my grandchildren, trying to still do this male achievement and trying to save our young men. And to have this on me, having my own son and in the system where I fought so hard off his life to deter that, and he's there now under those circumstances. So how do we get those that we know that are sincere, and how do we bring that collaborative effort together? Because it is going to take a team. It's not no one person. It's going to take all of us to come together.
Yeah, it's going to take a team. It has to be a movement.
It has to be.
The problem
is
it's so difficult to get.
How do we decipher who's for real and who's not?
You
know they come good now. How do we determine what is real?
It's really no way to determine that beforehand.
You just have to have a situation set up where you can get rid of people once you find out they're there for the wrong reason. Some people will be there to spy. Some people will be there to see what they can get out of it. Some people will be there to see if there's some grant money involved. You know, then there's some people who are coming to control it. They believe that they have all the answers, and for whatever God-given reason, everybody should listen to them. You know, you have those egomaniacs. So, you know, whenever you bring black people together, whether it's to help youth, whether it's to build, you know, some sort of industry or institution, you're going to have that. Because, as you know, black folk are cursed with self-hatred and post-traumatic slavery disorder. And as a result of that, bringing us together for our own benefit is one of the most difficult things you can do. You can bring black people together for the benefit of white people. You can bring them together for the benefit of Arabs. You can bring them together. As you can see, black people all around the world are coming together to defend Gaddafi, but they don't come together to defend any of the nations in sub-Saharan Africa. They don't come together to defend black boys right here in the United States. We'll come together for anybody else's problem, but we won't come together for our own problem. I've seen black folk, you know, put together different types of initiatives for Iraq and Afghanistan and people suffering in Libya. And I don't have a problem with anybody, you know, feeling compassion for what's going on with another people. But you should never have more compassion for another folk above and beyond your own. So, you know, getting us to do for ourselves and to do what is right by ourselves is very difficult because we have been so desensitized to our own suffering. And as the Honorable Marcus Garvey said, black people are cursed with petty differences. It's hard to bring us together without somebody starting some kind of trouble. We'll fight over religion. We'll fight over skin tone. We'll fight over education. We'll fight over grants. We'll fight over who got a right to be in control. You know, but even though we know that those are the different barriers that are in front of us, we still have to push. There's always hope. And it is my hope that we can get enough people together with the same mindset. See, the whole key is you got to get people with the same mindset. The problem is they're not going to be honest about their mindset. But it is my firm belief that if we keep on searching for the right people, sooner or later you will get that glomerate, that critical mass, that collective conglomerate that you can then use to move mountains with. Garvey did it. We can do it too.
And that is so true. I just want to say to my audience, every time that I talk to Brother Umar on subjects like this, I get very emotional because I take it so personal. It affects me directly, not just with my own child, but for other young men that they trust me and their parents trust me as well, some of them. And then we want to go to the parents because the problems, the things that I see now, Brother Umar, and we're going to go into the school. As you know, I adopted a while back the elementary school, Benjamin Comegys. And in being in the school, and this is an elementary school, the behavior and the anger and the rage of the young black boys really surprised me and broke my heart. But what surprised me more was the attitude of the parents now. And I had recently a young man come to me, and he tells me, "Miss Rashida, my mom doesn't want me to come around and be with you anymore. She wants me to go and get a job." He's 15. "She wants me to bring income in the home. She doesn't encourage me to for school." He had was selected to be in a school summer program to get his grades up. The mother threw the paper in the trash. He was selected to go on a mentoring program, and the mother threw that in the trash. And how do we just determine of what actions to take with parents like that? And how do myself best assist this young man living in a situation like that?
Well, the best thing to do is to, you know, if you can, engage the parent directly, because there may be more to the story than we actually know.
I engaged her, I did engage the mom. The mom did not want to hear anything positive in reference to efforts to help her son. Her main concern is, "I'm broke, we need income, he eats me out of house or home, he got to do something."
Which could be true. Here's the issue. Because a teenager with his working papers is only allowed to legally be employed for a certain amount of hours per day and week anyhow, I'm not understanding why he can't participate in both. In other words, he should still be able to work his 20 hours a week, which is all you can do during school hours anyway, during the school week. He should be able to do that and still participate in the extracurriculars. So I'm not understanding why he can't do both, because you're not allowed to have a full-time job as a child. So I'm not understanding why he can't do both unless he's working a job somewhere where he's being paid under the table, which is illegal, you know, and the employer as well as the parent could be reported for that. But if he's working a legal job where they have a copy of his working papers and he's filled out his tax information or what have you, I don't see why he can't be a part of the different initiatives that you're trying to assist him with as well as work, because I do think employment for teens is very, very important. But I don't see why he can't do both.
Okay, let's take it back. Now let's take it back to the environment that we live in, and then we're gonna take it there. We're talking about a young man that lives in the projects. We're talking about a young man that has nothing but drugs around him, crack and things of that nature. So when you have a parent that comes that way, even though they don't directly say it, the answer in which the money she's looking for is fast money. And his term was, Ms. Rashid, I'm not going to sell drugs. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. My mother hasn't given me nothing in a few years. And she's been reported. He said, but my brother is placed now, and where he's placed is horrible, and I don't want to go there.
Well,
so
here's the thing.
A little deeper, combating these parents. See, there's a lot of issues, and we know that DHS is not the best. When it comes to assisting our young people, it's like throwing them in another cage and to be abused and things of that nature, because they're really not going through the proper channels of rebuilding that family, especially this family structure. And it's not like they haven't been involved in the system, but that system is not adequately assisting them. So this is why you have young people that seek out individuals like myself in the neighborhood, because they look for us for safe havens. They just want to, some of them just want to come to my house and sit. They just come here, sit. Don't they, guys? Just come here. They laugh and they come here and just sit. And it's a peaceful place for them. But then come back with the family, the mother. So now, you know, they sneak. So now I'm caught in the rock and the hard place, because you're telling me how horrible and horrific the changes that your brother went through, and you don't want to go through the change of being placed. And then yet and still, I see that not removing you from the home is a problem. And then if I see that if I go against the grain and give you that peace and let you come here and stay for a while, then you go home and go to bed, get up and go to school in the morning. So far that's been working, but I know that that's going to end. So I guess I'm a little stuck with the psychological aspect of understanding a parent of what is going on in that African-American community with the parents that are not being the mom-moms, the big mamas, and the back-in-the-day type of parents. What's going on?
Well, you have to realize that, unfortunately, you know, and the responsibilities of both the man and the woman, but unfortunately you find that a lot of times women are stuck raising children that they don't necessarily want to raise, number one, and many of them, you know, don't care enough about to raise correctly. I believe that every parent has a basic level of love. There's a basic low-grade level of compassion you have for your child. But that basic low-grade level of compassion that you have for your child is not sufficient for you to be successful at raising a child. No two parents love their children the same, okay? You take you with your grandchildren, another grandma with her grandchildren. No two people love their children at the same level. And unfortunately, we have too many parents who don't love their children enough to care for them. See, a lot of us have that low-grade love. I love you. I want the best for you. But I don't love you enough to make sure you get the best. I don't love you enough to make sure you get exposed to the right people. I don't love you enough to make sure you do your homework. I don't love you enough to come to your report card conferences. I don't love you enough to prevent you from getting pregnant as a teenager. You see, we have that low-grade compassion, but a lot of black parents, I'm finding, don't love their children enough in order to make sure they're successful. And the biggest reason why they cannot love their children enough for them to be successful is because they don't love themselves. There's no way you can be self-hating. There's no way you can have low self-esteem and that not affect how you raise your children, because they are from you. So if you don't believe you deserve love, you don't believe your children deserve love. If you believe you had a bad childhood, then you believe that they should also be subject to a bad childhood. You see, so when you have people, self-hating people having children, it's one of the worst things you can do, because their children are going to be raised the same way they were, if not worse. The same way they were, if not worse. I know of a young girl right now who desperately wants to spend time with her father, but her mother doesn't want her to. Now, the mother doesn't spend time with the daughter either, but she won't give the daughter to her father. Look at that. You're neglecting the baby, but you won't let the baby go to her dad because of your feelings toward the dad. So this little child has to suffer. Why? Because you don't love her enough to look out for her best interest. The situation you just talked about with what that mother's doing, she loves her son, but she don't love him enough to give him the best push forward she can possibly can. See, when we talk about post-traumatic slavery disorder, we got to recognize that it infects and affects every institution that we have. Post-traumatic slavery disorder is alive and well in the black family. That's why you see abuse. That's why you see neglect. That's why you see domestic violence. That's why you see child sex assault, whether it is incest or molestation. Okay, post-traumatic slavery disorder is alive and well in the black family itself.
You know, it when you hear this and you reflect, as I reflect as coming up as a kid and I see my father, you know, alcoholic and the whole nine yards, abusive, and you think about the, as an adult, of the psychological effects that had on me coming up. And it was profound. It was devastating. And then I look at our young boys now. I'm sitting here looking at three of them now. And it's a devastating thing. Men do not realize. I don't know. Some realize and some just can't gesture up the strength or the mental capacity to deal with the situations and issues of young black men. And right here now, there's an initiative on reentry. And that is something there, recidivism and things of that nature that this campaign is thriving on now. Now all of a sudden everyone is so interested in our African-American men going to prison and getting out of prison because there's funding now in the system, in the funding sector for this. I'd like you to speak.
But they're not helping. They're not helping. No more than the halfway houses are not helping.
I want you to speak on that, this reentry initiatives. And I just got an email about one that's being headed by Seth Williams, IDA, at the district attorney's office, and this workshop initiative. And I tell you the truth, I feel like this, and I feel the same way that you do. If I wasn't contacted by certain things or received the email to come to a workshop, then certain things that people are doing, I look at as really, what are you doing it for? Are you doing it for the right reason? I hate to be so cynical to think that everyone that are involved in these different initiatives, that these people are not sincere. So where do people fall? Where is these things falling in the cracks? Not everything just can't be on greed. So there has to be something else that's going on, and you're the psychologist. There's something else. It has to be that's a little deeper. You can't tell me these people are that vicious and that.
Yes, they are that vicious. Yes, they are. One thing we have to recognize, the civil rights movement gave birth unintentionally to a new class of uppity Negroes that the government and the American social order could call upon to use to keep the black community dumb, deaf, and blind. This new class of Negroes, which is known by some circles as the talented tenth, by other circles as the black bourgeoisie, other circles as the black aristocracy, uppity Negroes, okay? You have them in all shapes, and sizes, and they come in all professions. There's five basic families to the black aristocracy. There's the entertainment family, the blacks who misinform us by way of their privileged position in entertainment. You have the education family. These are black folk with doctorate degrees, JDs, MDs, PsyDs. You have the economics family. These are black people who have at least $500 million in collateral. You have the religious family. These are megachurch preachers and imams and religious personalities who have control over people's spirits and minds and the way that they think. Okay, and then you have the status group. The status family are black people who have titles. I'm the district attorney. I'm the mayor. I'm the school board superintendent, okay? And we have to recognize that these five families of the black aristocracy are used against the best interests of the black community. Their sole goal is to keep us oppressed and disenfranchised. Why? Because as long as the masses stay down, then the few can stay up. The only way you can remain in the black aristocracy is to maintain black people in a subservient posture. Because there can be no privileged position when everybody is equitable. Equality is the enemy of aristocracy. So whenever you have an aristocracy, you have inequality. The fact that Mayor Nutter or Seth Williams or Arlene Ackerman or the police commissioner, the reason why they belong to an aristocracy is because there is inequality within the black community. If you destroy inequality and bring about equality, there is no black aristocracy. But that's the last thing that they want. And that's why they will work and do anything they can to keep their privileged position vis-a-vis other black people. We have to stop trying to work with members of the black aristocracy because at the end of the day, the interests that they serve are not the interests in the black community. They are the interests that control the black community. If I am a black aristocrat, it's because I love the relationship that I have with certain ruling members of the American social order, and I am not willing to relinquish that relationship for any reason, including my people. And in fact, if I need to sell my people down the river, that's exactly what I will do for 30 dirty pieces of silver.
We're going to flip this because what I'm going to do, I'm going to stop asking questions. And, Brother Umar, these last 10 minutes that we have, I want you to do what you do best because this is something that we all need to hear, need to keep it real. So I want you to speak on exactly continue with the psycho-academic war against black boys, but also I want you to speak on whatever your heart is telling you to speak on now, and I'm going to sit back, and I'm going to turn this over to you, and if Jacqueline Taylor Adams, if there is a caller on the line, you can feel free to let Brother Umar know, but right now, for the next 10 minutes, Brother Umar, I want to give it to you so you can speak what's on your mind, and you can let us know what it is that we need to know.
Indeed. Firstly, I want to give the listeners my contact information in case there's any parent out there who's struggling in the dark with an issue as it relates to either her son or her daughter or his son or her daughter, for our married parents, their children. Please feel free to call on me if there's an evaluation report you want me to look over, if you think your child has been inaccurately classified as mentally retarded, autistic, learning disabled, emotionally disturbed, ADHD, conduct disorder, opposition to defiant disorder. If you want a second opinion, feel free to get in contact with me. My consultations are free. You can email me at umarabdullahjohnson@yahoo.com. You can also connect with me on Facebook. I am on Facebook under Umar Abdullah Johnson. I have dozens of YouTube clips that you can watch. But you can also call me at area code 215-989-9858. Again, that's 215-989-9858. I do a lot of speaking. I'm not in the city as much as before, but I still earn my livelihood by evaluating children, so I am in the city about 3 days a week. But if you desire to contact me, if you want to schedule a seminar or free training for the parents in your community, I travel across the country. This coming Saturday, I'll be in Durham, North Carolina. I'll be speaking at the Stafford L. Warren Library, 1201 Fayetteville Avenue. That's in Durham, North Carolina, this coming Saturday, June 25th. From 1 to 5 p.m. Also on Saturday, I'll be on Brooklyn, New York City's public access television station, BCAT Studios, at 2 o'clock.
I'll be on a show talking about the psychoacademic war against black boys. So any New Yorkers, please turn on the television this coming Saturday at 2 o'clock. I'll be in Syracuse, New York, the 7th and 8th of July, and I will be speaking with Dr. Julius Garvey, younger son of the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, at the Roots Foundation Marcus Garvey Extravaganza on Saturday, August the 20th. Black people, I want parents to stop trusting black people in the public school. I'm finding that one of the biggest ways that our boys are being hammered, mistreated, and marginalized is because black parents are assuming that black teachers and black principals are on their side. You cannot make that assumption because most black educators in the public school system, be they counselors, nurses, school psychologists, principals, or instructors, belong to that black bourgeoisie class that I'm talking about. So they do not have the best interests of black children at heart. I can tell you that most of the fighting that I do, most of the wars, battles that I participate in are against black educators and black principals. It's not against white folk. It's against black folk. So please stop giving them the benefit of the doubt because it can cost your son his future. Now, as it relates to the political situation in which we as black people are in, we have to start analyzing our political situation a little bit better. Black people suffer from a paralysis of analysis. We believe anything the radio says. We believe anything the television says. We believe anything we read in a newspaper. We believe anything a black leader tells us. We believe anything an elected official tells us. We believe anything that our preachers tell us. Stop doing that. Do your research. Read the newspaper. Go on the internet, okay? Get your news from several different sources. Okay, you can't trust none of them. That's why you have to get it from several different sources so you can read between the lines and piece together the truth. Why? Because all media in the world is controlled by five families. Five families control all the media in the world. The media in the world is controlled by Disney, General Electric, TNT, Time Warner, Rupert Murdoch Company, and then there's one more. 99% of everything you read, everything you see, everything you hear comes from the same five white families. So it's very important that you study and get your information from several different sources. Don't just believe what you get on face value. When you're dealing with other black people, it's very difficult to determine who you are dealing with. I don't need to remind you that the FBI and the CIA has increased its surveillance of the black community in the past 10 years. And as a result of that, there's a lot of FBI and CIA agents who live in your neighborhood. They might live next door to you. You might be married to one, okay? It's important that you recognize this. I don't want to make people paranoid, but understand that there are a lot of agents, official black agents in the black community whose job is to gather intel and take it back to the FBI, the CIA, and the State Department. So please be careful with whom you talk about different ideas and strategies and tactics that you have or may want to use because it may be used against your better good. When you evaluate black people, you evaluate them based on five criteria. Five criteria. I don't care if it's me. I don't care if it's Tavis Smiley. I don't care if it's the person next door, your elected official. If you only want to see what a black person is made of as it relates to their commitment to black people, you judge them on five criteria. The first one is consciousness. How much do you know about our problem? How intelligent are you? How much background information do you have on the issue at hand? Because the last thing we need is a dumb revolutionary. I said the last thing we need is an uninformed and undereducated revolutionary. So the first criteria is consciousness. The second criteria is courage. How much guts do you have? How scared are you of the American social order? Are you willing to talk truth to power, or do you only talk truth when everybody sitting in the room is black? Okay? How much courage do you have? How willing are you to stand up to the American social order and tell the truth even when white folks are present? Number three, commitment. How committed are you to the improvement of black life? How committed are you? Are you willing to lose your job? Are you willing to use your education? Are you willing to lose your home? Are you willing to lose your wife or your husband? Because it may cost you that much. How committed are you? What are you not able to part with for this struggle? And whatever you are not able to part with for this struggle can and will be used against the best interests of your people. Number four, consistency.
How consistent are you? Do you fight this battle every day, or do you fight this battle when there's something in it for you? Do you only fight this battle in the summer but not in the wintertime? Do you only come out of hiding when you think there's some grant money, or you think there might be a radio slot for you, or you think you might be able to get some TV time? Okay? Opportunists. Opportunists are not consistent. You only see an opportunist when there's something in it for them. So are you an opportunist, or are you consistently fighting the struggle? And number five is creativity. What are you building to improve the condition of the community? Are you building a program? Are you opening a school? Are you trying to build a business where you can employ black people? Are you trying to create some sort of a task force where we can keep black men out of jail? Are you fighting with the politicians to make sure that the reentry programs that they have are qualitative and effective? Creativity speaks to work. What are you doing? What are you creating? How are you adding to the solution and not contributing to the problem? So you must judge all black people on those five criteria. Never go to hoodwink by nobody. Never accept anything that you're told. You must study three things that are common to all great black leaders. Every great black leader did three things. They studied, they struggled, and they disseminated information. They studied. They had to be knowledgeable. They struggled. They participated in some sort of organization that went face-to-face with the power structure in some way, shape, or form. Okay, and they disseminated information, which means they taught other people about what's going on. If you follow those five criteria, and if you make sure you engage yourself in the three behaviors common to all successful black leaders, you will be fine.
Wow. Brother Umar Abdullah Johnson, it is always a wonderful, wonderful pleasure, my brother, to speak with you, to engage with you, to fellowship with you, and to share what we passionately share. And you always enlighten me on some things that truly blows my mind all the time. Once again, I want to give out your number. You can reach Brother Umar Abdullah Johnson at area code 215-989-9858. Once again, that's 215-989-9858. And also, if you can reach him via email, and that would be Umar Abdullah Johnson at yahoo.com. Once again, Umar Abdullah Johnson at yahoo.com. Brother Umar, I love you, and I want to have you back on the flip side because I did not even attempt to engage in some other topics that I wanted to cover with you, so I definitely have to have you back on a second time at the flip side when you're available. I don't care if you just call in and drop me a line and let me know you're available that day, because you know me, I don't like doing things that are scripted and things of that nature, so I like to just go ahead because I feel as though it's best done this way, when we speak what's on our mind and let our young people be the voice. And we as adults, this is how we learn how to assist our young people. Sometimes we have to listen. And then, as you said, we have to have courage, and we cannot be scared to speak out and to speak against those who are not for us, because I'm so tired of sitting back and watching. You know, I don't sit back. I talk. But I watch people just sit back and let things go on one end, and then they want to say that we are community leaders. Far as I've seen in Philadelphia, I haven't seen any. So if anyone is a community leader out there that are leading, not just talking, that are leading our young people, please hit us up on the flip side. I'm your host, Mrs. Rashida Jabbar. I can be reached at jowjab@aol.com. And Brother Umar, the young men want to say good night to you.
Good night, Brother Umar.
Good night, young brothers. Good night. It's been good.
Okay. We love you, Brother Umar. Keep
love
doing
you too,
what
you Queen.
Do.
Be in touch real soon.
Yes, we are. You are blessed, my brother, and you are favored. And I am so happy that God has placed you in my life and in my path to stay a while. And I pray that you stay until he take us on home and even stay after that. Okay, Jacqueline Taylor Adams. And Jacqueline Taylor Adams, we want to continue to pray for your mother. We want to pray for my mother-in-law, who was just sent back to the hospital. And we want to keep my mother, Rosie Porter, in prayers as well. And we're going to sign out on the flip side once again. Brother Umar Johnson, Abdullah Johnson, I thank you so much. You have enlightened me and my young people here. And I hope that what you have said, that a lot of people that are listening, they would get up and act now, because there's no excuse to keep sitting back and being idle and not contributing. Jacqueline Taylor Adams, once again, I love this song, Thank You, because I'm so thankful for my Lord allowing people of Brother Umar, Sister Jacqueline Taylor Adams, my husband Jalil Jabbar, Brother Ted Sutton, Trey McNair, and so many others to be a part of my life. Jacqueline Taylor Adams, thank you.
All righty, we just thank everyone. I just wanted to share, we have another, even though no one wants to speak, but we have even more callers on the line right now. And the chat room, we had Dr. BG, who Brother Umar, you really have touched. He has struggled with some psychological issues, and you really touched him with your statements and everything, and they've been taking
well,
notes.
If you want to go to them questions, we can, sis. I mean, I'm good
we
to
have
go.
Time, Jacqueline.
Oh, yes, we stopped streaming live, but we're still on the air.
Okay.
People didn't come into the chat room or call or listen in. But you answered his question. His one question was about, we'll go back. He says he's doing his master's thesis on holistic psychiatry, and he can echo your comments regarding informed consent. He's been diagnosed with a mental illness himself and use consciousness to break free from Western psychiatry. And so, you know, he has been in the chat room the whole time intently listening, taking notes, and he just had asked the question, is it inappropriate to blacklist the ones we know are playing games? For someone newly awakened and a doer, I'd rather not waste time with these devils or have to find out, quote unquote, the hard way, what they are all about. But then he said that, came back later, said, disregard my question. He's actually answering it right now with five things he's bringing up. So the criteria, which we did post in the chat room, he will use that criteria to evaluate. So, and we posted all your contact information, but I just wanted to let you know that even though you couldn't hear it, you were touching people as you were speaking.
Oh, indeed. That's a blessing. Blessing enough.
And Jacqueline, I would like for you, if you can, you and Brother Umar, because he needs to, if you can get that to him, some of those statements, so he can perhaps reach out to the brother or talk to him or whatever. We want to keep that going. And as I said, Jacqueline has been posting while we were talking everything in the chat room. She was posting what was going on. And she is phenomenal, Brother Umar. She really is. Without her,
oh, right.
I tell you, God, this wouldn't be possible without Jacqueline. And she's going through situations, personal situations, caregiving for her mom. So it's a little stressful in our lives right now. And for her to take the time out and to have the passion and love for our young people, she is a phenomenal sister. So I definitely want the two of you to connect. Jacqueline does marketing. As you see, she does the talk show. She does so much. And she's another one of the unsung heroes in our community that doesn't, get recognized for, not recognized for fame, but recognized to utilize her services. Because she's definitely one on the ground that's definitely out here trying to do the best that she can for our young people through her marketing efforts of TV shows, radio shows, whatever she can do, tours with the young people, positive. This is definitely a sister that I would like for you to continue some type of communication with.
Indeed.
Okay. All righty. So I do want to let y'all know, I think we are now off air.
Mm-hmm.
The show ended, but we went off air. The three of us are still talking, but I think they took us off air. Also, to let you know, Brother Umar, two people from Blog Talk were listening in.
Okay.
Two people were listening in. Now, it could have been that we said Judah Kinsman and Frederick Douglass, but, they do that periodically. I haven't had that. I think I only had that done once in over 3 years, but Yeah, two people from Blog Talk were on the line the whole time. So, but I'm going to look up.
She's excited about that one.
I know it happens. You know, I have brothers keepers. You know, they second generation Panthers. You know, they had a regular show on here. So, it's expected. So,
right.
You know, this is You know, so I know it because they have all ones by their numbers. They don't, they don't have a regular number, but they let you know that every so often they monitor. But, there's certain shows that they choose to monitor. you just were so moving and enlightened. I was trying to keep up with you. I just told everybody, look, you gotta, if you couldn't listen live, please listen on demand. So this show is on demand, so it can be downloaded. You can download the MP3 if you want to use it, in other situations, you can use it. So you can download the file for yourself. It should be available in about 5 minutes.
All right.
The show stays on constantly for years, Brother Umar. So that would be online.
All right.
Yeah, so this is something to show that I definitely will be pushing out there for the next 2 weeks for those members, people that didn't listen to it. A lot of people listen to it the next day. So this is, it was really profound and it was very moving and touching. And it opened my eyes to a lot of things and gave me a better understanding of a lot of issues that were going on with me personally, dealing with my grandsons and my son and the young people that I service. And I'm just so thankful to you.
Yeah, no problem. No problem.
Yeah, and I'm going to take you up on your offer because, right now I have a grandson just turned 19 that, I'm blessed. I'm happy to say he's off of life support. He was shot 4 times, not this past Friday, but the Friday before.
Mm.
And it was a lot of things that I felt, I've doubted myself. I feel these things all the time, but I've been told I'm militant, I'm different. I always just felt like I was an outsider. And, I was like, you're too this, you're too that. And these are things I've always felt. And then I feel bad that I just didn't follow my mind and go ahead and pull my kids out, because my husband passed. And I had to raise my grandkids. And I'm mad at myself that I didn't just go all out with things I felt, didn't feel right about. But we learn. So,
I know
so many people, you'd be surprised.
Right?
We're going to be having conversations between you pages because HBCU kids, she was talking about this black aristocrat. She didn't call it that, but because she was into a special MBA program, she says, they targeted them since pre-high school. They target certain group of blacks that were doing well academically, and they follow them, and they put them in position for corporate, to work corporate America, and all they have a certain mentality. And they put her down. But I don't know why you're trying to help. You know those kind of people. You wouldn't want – this is – they're talking about, everyday black folks because she – gives back to the community, and they put her down, and they said it's a waste of your time. I don't know why you want to be around, and this is, and they've been breeding these people. They've been breeding this,
right.
Corporate America is breeding this black aristocrat, as you say, but corporate America is breeding them, and they target them, so they take the best of our best, our best minds and academics, and they target them early on, and they breed them for corporate America. And that
That's
is
right.
why we have these people that aren't giving back because
Jackie,
they're not,
Jackie, we're going to go, and if you have Brother Umar's number, his email, and I want you all to stay connected when you can because I'm sure that there's more
Definitely.
That you would like to talk about. Is that okay, Brother Umar?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, then. And me and you are going to stay in touch, and I wish you a safe trip, safe journey, and I'm going to talk to you soon I love you so much, my brother.
Lady.
Thank you. I appreciate
Indeed.
It.
Peace and love.
All right, then.
All right. Peace.
Woo. Woo. That thing was powerful.